You're listening to Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskell. My guest today is Brittany Van Sitters, political and organizing director at the Oregon League of Conservation Voters. Brittany joins to discuss how the Environmental Protection Agency is being refashioned into the Environmental Destruction Agency, OLCV's legislative scorecard, and what we can do to push Oregon legislators to meet this moment of overlapping crises with real action. My email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. I would love to hear what you think of the show. Let's jump right in. Brittany Van Sitters, welcome to Coast Range Radio.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So I've been wanting to talk with Oregon League of Conservation Voters for a while. You all are a very effective advocacy organization. Can you just start us off by telling us what is OLCV? What's the mission? What's a little bit of background about the organization?
Yeah. So we think of ourselves as the political arm for the environment. We work to protect clean air, clean water, natural spaces and wildlife, and to promote a just renewable energy future. And we do that work by engaging our members to help elect pro-environment candidates, pass pro-environment policies, and stop bad policies, primarily at the state level. And we also work to hold our elected officials accountable.
Great. And what's your role with the organization?
So I'm the political and organizing director. I oversee our volunteer engagement work, including educating our volunteers on our issues, recruiting them to town halls or to testify on a bill, organizing events like lobby days, and just providing opportunities for folks to participate in the political process. I also oversee our endorsement process and electoral field program, and I do our democracy work, which includes things like voter education and some policy advocacy.
So I originally reached out to you about the Environmental Protection Agency rollbacks to a bunch of really important climate programs. Could you first give us just a basic overview of what the EPA is proposing to do, and then we'll dig in a little deeper on some of those specifics?
So back in March, the EPA and Administrator Lee Zeldin announced that he was proposing to roll back 31 environmental regulations, including like mercury and air toxic standards, wastewater regulations for oil and gas development, vehicle standards, the 2009 endangerment finding, and 27 other regulations related to protecting clean air and clean water. And these proposed rule changes are on top of the funding and staff cuts that Trump and Zeldin have made. One estimate is that the EPA staff would be cut by up to one third by the end of this year. So the outlook is pretty bleak.
Yeah, I mean, you can just go down the line with the Trump administration and say that. So I want to dig into some of these more specifically, but you mentioned the endangerment finding, and some folks might not know what that is. So could you give us a little explainer on what that means?
Yeah. So the 2009 endangerment finding is what gives EPA the authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions to promote public health. So repealing this rule really hinders the agency and its ability to do its job and protect clean air. It would be pretty devastating if it were overturned.
Yeah, you're right. These are a big deal. So are the vehicle standards. If you want to go into more detail on any of those in particular, please do. And I also want to know, what are some of the consequences of these actions? Like, not just nationally, but here for Oregon, and then obviously for the planet.
Yeah. Like I said, the outlook is pretty bleak. The staffing cuts to EPA, like that is just going to hinder the agency's ability to actually enforce the clean air and clean water protections that they currently have, which means more polluters will be able to break the law and get away with it. And our communities are really going to pay the price. And of course, that assumes that the regulations that we do have remain as they are, which we know that they won't with these 31 rules, likely to be repealed or rolled back in some fashion. The endangerment finding and the vehicle standards were sort of tied together. So that would seem to signal that, like, as goes one, so goes the other. Mm-hmm. And if the EPA's attempt to repeal the endangerment finding in vehicle standards is successful, we will absolutely see increased pollution from tailpipe emissions, power plants, mining, and other industrial development. And more pollution means dirtier air and water, poorer public health, worsening climate change, higher costs for families. When this proposal was made earlier this year, the LA Times released an article that said nearly 200,000 additional premature deaths in the next 25 years and 10,000 extra asthma attacks each day would come as a result of repealing all of these 31 regulations. So it's a really big price to pay. And we don't have to look that far back in our history to see the type of world that we could end up living in without an EPA that actually can do its job.
Such good points. And I appreciate that you brought in the deaths that will result from this. You know, we often abstract things like climate change and pollution, especially carbon pollution, but these have real world immediate consequences today. You know, air pollution is one of the leading causes of deaths worldwide, and it obviously affects children, the elderly, our most vulnerable population. So I appreciate that you bringing that in. That's something that we should always be hammering every time we discuss this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a human element to climate that often gets forgotten, but it's very, very real. And so many communities know that all too well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what is the timeline for this? Is there something that you're asking folks to do to get involved?
The timeline is challenging to pin down. It's different for all 31 rules, and the current government shutdown really complicates that. Like, you know, are these processes ongoing? Are their staff actually like going through these comments and using them to do the rulemaking? I don't know. So OLCV and our national partner LCV are keeping an eye on these rulemaking processes and opportunities for public comment. The endangerment finding and the vehicle standards, the public comment closed back in September, and we had heard that the process was going to be fast-tracked under the shutdown, but you know, like I said, it's hard to know if staff are actually working, so we really don't know. If folks are interested in following it, you can visit regulations.gov to see what rules are open for public comment. You can search by the rule name or the agency that it's under. You can search for like current rules or upcoming comment periods. So you can follow us, or you can follow regulations.gov if you want to kind of see the broader scope of all of the regulations across all agencies that are being considered.
I mean, you got to be following regulations.gov.
Well, yes.
Best follow out there. But how do people follow your work?
Yeah. So olcv.org, that's our website. Real simple. We have social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky. You can follow our work there. On our email list, we send out action alerts and opportunities to engage, events that are coming up and things like that. And we kind of duplicate all of the email stuff onto our socials as well. So if that's where you're seen, you can follow us online too.
So before we move off of these EPA rollbacks, you know, since you're a Oregon-focused organization, this is a Northwest-focused radio show podcast, you know, what should we be or could we be expecting from elected leaders, other folks in positions of power and influence here in Oregon? Should we be pushing them to do anything on this? Are we sort of just prisoners of the national scene right now? What do you think on that?
I mean, it is easy to feel like we might be prisoners, but I think there's definitely opportunities that the state can take the lead on. There, you know, during the first Trump administration, our state legislature kind of doubled down on some of the environmental policies that we have in place, like the State Environmental Protection Act, and they basically like reaffirmed that, you know, regardless of what the federal government does here in Oregon, we're going to keep doing what we've been doing, protecting our environment and our communities and protecting clean air and clean water. So we could certainly see that again from our state leaders. I think the challenge that is different this time around is the budget. HR 1 is really, that's the Republicans' big ugly bill, big beautiful bill, whatever you want to call it. It's having really significant impacts on our state budget. And unlike the federal government, our state cannot operate at a deficit. So we can only spend the money that we have. And the federal cuts included in that bill are causing an estimated $888 million shortfall just for the 2025-27 biennium. And this is expected to continue throughout the Trump administration. So that's just for right now. Like, we're going to see more shortfalls in the years to come. And while many of those cuts are coming for programs like SNAP and Medicaid and other essential programs, that means that there is less of the pie for everything else, including our natural resources agencies and our climate programs, like our heat pump deployment programs and community resilience hubs. And so legislators are looking for like anywhere that they can make cuts in order to cover these essential programs. And we saw this in 2025, and we've seen it historically, that our environment is typically first on the chopping block, and we really just cannot afford to continue this habit. It's not going to do us much good anyway, because the current budget that we are in, our natural resources agencies only make up less than 2.5% of the budget overall. So when we cut these agencies, it's not going to cover any of the shortfalls. And in fact, a lot of these natural resources agencies are enforcing the regulations we have on the book for clean air and clean water. When we don't have those things, our communities are sicker. We need access to more health care. And so it just kind of trickles down. We're in a really challenging time. That said, I do think that there is more that Oregon can do to lead. And in the absence of federal leadership, it's really the time that we need our states to lead. So that's what we're hoping for. That's what we're working with our state lawmakers on, is finding opportunities for them to lead and to be bold. And we're not saying it's going to be easy, but, we have to protect our communities and our environment. And
nothing is easy right now. That doesn't mean that it's not critical and important. Right. But I agree with you on the challenges that they're facing. And, I don't envy an Oregon legislator right now, because
absolutely not.
Yeah, there's no easy choices. There's, the cuts have to come from somewhere. So and you're right that it's going to come from these sort of programs that don't have as strong a constituency. Which is, which is a plug for people to be making sure to contact your state rep, your state senators, your county officials, but especially your Oregon legislators, and let them know what your priorities are, because we're entering a time of austerity for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
You're sort of leading us into some of the political questions I want to ask you about, but I want to maybe put a pin on that and come back to it. And since we were talking a bit about the legislature and legislators, maybe first we can talk about the OLCV 2025 scorecard, where you go through the bills from this year, you go through all the legislature and rank folks. So talk me through the scorecard a little bit. Where do folks find it? What is it? How do you interact with it?
Sure. So the OLCV scorecard is one of the things that we're sort of known for. We've been releasing it since 1975. And we release them in the fall after every long legislative session, so every odd numbered year. And it grades our state legislators on how they voted on environmental issues. So there's a digital version on our website. You can find it at olcvscorecard.org. And you can read about the most important climate and environmental bills from the 2025 legislative session. You can find out which ones passed or didn't. You can look up how your legislators voted on these bills. And the scorecard is one of our best tools for accountability. So we really hope that folks will use this as a tool to inform some immediate accountability for lawmakers. So as you just mentioned, we encourage folks to reach out to your lawmakers by email or phone and thank them for a job well done. Positive accountability is really important. Mm-hmm. And if they didn't live up to expectations, you can urge them to prioritize climate action. If your lawmaker is holding a town hall or a constituent coffee, we encourage you to attend and ask about their OLCV score. You can join OLCV's town hall team to get updates about when and where these events may be happening if you're not already following your lawmakers. And then we also hope that folks will use our scorecard when they're voting. In addition to like the voters pamphlet, websites, and mail that you might receive, the scorecard can be another tool in that process.
And where do folks find that?
Yeah, the digital version is on our website, olcvscorecard.org. We do have some physical copies in our offices. So if you see us out tabling in the community, we will often have them available and you can take one home. But online is probably the most accessible place to find it.
So again, that is olcvscorecard.org. I loved clicking around. It's really easy to navigate and use. You have the contact information for the legislators. I definitely encourage folks to check that out. So let's move on to the big legislative drama of the fall, and actually of the entire session this year, the transportation legislation saga. So we don't have, 5 hours to talk about this. So could you just give me a kind of high level summary of what happened with that? And then maybe I'll ask a couple follow-up questions.
Sure. I don't have 5 hours of knowledge to give, sure. So that's helpful. This is veering into my colleague's territory, Eliza Walton. She's the person that is our advocate in the building. So what I know is kind of the basic level that, anyone from the community can kind of get away with. The transportation package, we always knew that it was going to be a heavy lift. I mentioned we were really hopeful with Democratic supermajorities that, the chambers could raise taxes and raise revenues without a Republican vote. And so we went in with hope, but knowing that we had our work cut out for us. We worked alongside the Move Oregon Forward Coalition, which is a broad coalition of over 50 organizations working toward a safe, equitable, and climate smart transportation system. And so, like I said, I wasn't engaged in the day-to-day meetings and crafting mm-hmm. of House Bill 2025 during the legislative session, but ultimately the bill failed. It did not pass. And so in September, the legislature came back for a special session. And they passed a budget fix, House Bill 3991, which protected jobs and made some short-term investments in public transit. But there's still a really long way to go and as far as passing a comprehensive transportation package. The budget fix did not invest in safety, racial justice, or climate. And we are still in need of long-term funding solutions for our transportation system. One thing that we hope is addressed in the 2026 session is the road usage charge. The version that was passed in House Bill 3991 penalizes electric vehicle drivers. And we certainly believe that, people who drive EVs and hybrids should pay their fair share. But the current proposal is problematic and it would actually make the smart climate choice more expensive than a gas-powered car. So that's sort of where things are now. The 2026 session is really short. It's only, I believe, 35 days. So there's just like not a lot of time to get things done. So we'll do a little bit, kind of take small bites at the apple. And then 2027 will be another big time where we have more opportunity to make some significant changes and hopefully pass a comprehensive package.
Actually, this is a great segue into the next set of questions that I want to ask, because I was so furious about this saga. Democrats have, and of course, this is a nonpartisan podcast. So,
We're a nonpartisan organization.
But the fact is, Democrats had a supermajority trifecta. They did not need a single Republican vote. and allowing that they had like a couple members like in the hospital and dying and, you know, whatever. There was extenuating circumstances. But to have this be the ruling party's basically only priority and then have it fail, and then in the special session have it fail again and again before they finally passed something, and then have that bill penalize EVs and hybrids, like that, along with like what you were saying about how many bad bills there are, how little movement there was on any climate action. I mean, talk about not meeting the moment, in my opinion. You might feel differently, but with that rant out of the way, do you think that the current legislature here is sufficiently meeting this moment of overlapping crises? And if not, if so, you know, tell me how I'm wrong. But if you agree with me, is it a question in your mind of pushing current elected folks harder or smarter? Or do we also need to get some churn in the building and get some new voices in there?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is no. We don't feel that this legislature is meeting the moment. And we talked about this a little bit earlier. Like, I acknowledge that this is a really challenging time with the impacts of HR 1. Like, this is, you and I, we don't envy the position that our lawmakers are in right now. It's tough. But we also know that things aren't going to get any easier anytime sooner. Climate solutions will become more expensive the longer we wait. And we just desperately need states like Oregon to lead and show the rest of the country some hope. I think after the 2024 election, Oregon kind of did something different from the rest of the country. A lot of people were looking to us as like a beacon, and we're not living up to that. And to your question about working harder or smarter or getting new faces in the building, I think there we have an opportunity to do both in 2026. We have, so OLCV and the environmental community, I think we have what some might call high expectations, but what I would say are reasonable expectations for climate progress in the 2026 short legislative session. And we're going to push our current legislators to be bold and make hard choices. That is the job of a legislator. And no one ever said it was easy, but that is the job. And there is going to be some turnover in the legislature with a few incumbents retiring. And so we see that as an opportunity to use to elect more and stronger climate champions and set ourselves up for success in 2027. So, you know, not to say that the folks outgoing are not, you know, good on our issues, but we can always, you know, find someone who will be like a true champion and lead on these issues and speak on the floor and like take a gavel and be the chair of a committee. Those are all opportunities that we see when seats become open. So a little bit of both can be done.
Does OLCV ever take a stance in primaries? Because, you know, we have partisan primaries, which means that in a lot of seats, just like nationally here in Oregon, the only competitive election for like a state rep seat or a state Senate seat is in the primary, right? So if it's a pretty reliably Democratic leaning district, you know, whatever Democrat wins the primary is going to win the general election. Same is true for Republican leaning districts, but people really don't focus on the primaries that much. And I personally am a huge proponent of strategic primaries and strategic primary fights, where if somebody is in a safe Democrat or Republican seat and you think that you can get a better candidate in there, then I think that is a very legitimate battleground. But I know people get real upset when organizations start primarying incumbents. So what's you all's stance on that?
Yeah. So OLCD does engage in primaries. We very rarely will sort of lead the charge on primarying an incumbent. Politics is all about relationships. We have relationships with the folks who are in the building, and sometimes it's easier to kind of work those relationships and have open dialogue with incumbents than it is to like find an outside person who's willing to do the job, who has the background we want, who we know is going to be effective, and who we know can win. Because we don't want to burn that bridge with someone who we already have a relationship with. And I'm trying to think, we have with our progressive partners kind of banded together to unseat a sort of moderate who wasn't great on our issues or labor issues or what have you. And we've kind of banded together to get a stronger progressive champion. But sometimes it's easier to work with what you've got.
Well, I appreciate you answering that question. I know it's a thorny question for you. You all are dealing with really multi-layered calculations. And without me personally coming down on where you all are landing in my, Michael's view of how the world should work, I respect that those calculations are there and that they are difficult. I would love to see, and I don't necessarily, like you say, think this is you all's role, but I think one of the best ways to move incumbent legislators, especially ones in quote unquote safe districts, is to see that their job is not as safe as they would like to think it is. And I would love to see somebody or some organization mounting some really strategic challenges to entrenched incumbents.
Certainly appreciate that perspective, and it's a complicated issue. We, like you said, it's a calculation, and we want to be strategic. And if we're going to do it, we have to be able to come out with a win on the other side. So it's easier said than done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just want some of these conversations to help us understand how complicated all of this is so that we can, even when we're disagreeing, give each other a little more grace and understanding. So thanks for letting me ask you a couple of these trickier questions. Last couple questions. Is there anything we missed or you want to get included in the conversation? And also, just one more time, how do people get involved? How do people find your work and follow OLCV?
I don't think it was missed, but I do just want to double down on some of the comments you made about folks should contact their lawmakers. If this is an issue that you care about, it is often we see climate drop to the bottom of the list of priorities so often. But if you and your community are like on a regular basis calling your lawmaker and saying, "Hey, I'm your constituent. I care about this issue. This is my personal story about why I care. I want to see you take action." If everybody is doing that, it's going to elevate the issue for our lawmakers. And that's so important. We have to be the squeaky wheel to get the attention that the climate needs and with the urgency that we need to see that action. So just doubling down on that outreach. Our website is olcv.org. You can sign up for email updates to get action alerts on important legislation. You can also volunteer with us. You can join our town hall team, attend events like lobby days, help elect climate champions at state and local government. And then if you're interested in anything that we talked about or just want to learn more, please reach out to us. We have a team of organizers who would love to connect with you, and we're also on social media if that's more your scene. Direct links to those pages are on our website.
Well, Brittany Van Sitters, thank you so much for your work. I really appreciate what you do, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me. So thanks for joining us on Coast Range Radio.
Thanks so much for having me. This was great. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. Coast Range Radio is an independent, volunteer-led production. If you like the show, please help me grow the audience by telling your friends about it, following us on the socials, or best of all, share it with a couple friends by texting the link to our podcast feed. Once again, the show email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Reach out anytime. Thank you so much for listening. Let's make it through this together.
David R. Brower, and I add the R because there are 100 other David Browers in the United States, and that keeps me separate from most of them. I like the direction you're going in, KBOO, Portland, and I wish you had a lot more company.